Welcome to the Handy Guys Podcast, where we work together to complete that honey-do list, featuring answers to your questions and head-to-head tool challenges. Let's get started with the show with the Handy Guys, Brian and Paul.
Thanks, Adam.
All right. Thank you, Adam. And this is show number 5 of the Handy Guys Podcast. And before we get started with our show about compressors, let's give us our contact information. Brian, how can you contact us if you have any questions about this show or want to bring the questions to the Handy Guys?
Please contact us. Give us a call at area code 615-676-0877, or you can email us at handyguyspodcast.com, or you can use the contact form on our website, www.handyguyspodcast.com. Also, you may notice at the end of each of our show notes, there's a comments option. You can feel free to use the comments option as well, and we'll publish those comments if they're appropriate so that other people can see them as well.
That's right. And also, check out the Handy Guys Podcast store. We're gonna put some of our favorite tools on that store, and particularly with this show, we are going to put some great compressors, a couple compressors there, and a couple compressor tools if you're interested. So let's get started with our show. Today we're going to talk about compressors, and you know, a lot of guys that are into tools want to know if they should get a compressor. And the question for today's show is whether a handy guy, a handy woman, somebody who's doing work around the house, do they need a compressor? Is a compressor something that they ought to get as one of their key tools?
I don't know. I go both ways on this. It depends on what you're doing, really, Paul. I think if you're going to do framing, meaning you're going to be building walls, or if you're doing trim work, crown molding, if you're doing woodworking where you're using nails, then absolutely a compressor is very, very useful.
Right. And so let's get down to some examples. Let's say I'm a handy guy and maybe I'm putting up some crown molding. Is that something where I'd want a compressor?
Absolutely, because if you're hand nailing crown molding, that's a big, big pain in the neck. Nobody does that anymore.
Right, especially if you're up on a ladder too, and you're trying to hand nail, and you know, maybe a two-story foyer, you know, trying to put crown molding in. Then, do you want to be up there trying to hold the crown molding and a nail and a hammer at the same time?
Right, you just don't have enough hands. So the air nailer takes the place of two hands. It takes the place of the nail and the hammer.
Okay, so what about possibly other examples? I'm going to do some baseboard or some window trim or something like that.
Yeah, any trim work, installing doors, or building walls, all of those things are ideal uses.
Decks,
for some of it, yes. I'm preferential to using screws for actual decking boards, but some of the other aspects of building a deck you could use that framing nailer for, absolutely.
Okay, so it seems to me that if you're an active handy guy, you're a weekend warrior, a compressor could certainly save you a lot of time. But, you know, a compressor is an investment, and we're going to talk a little bit about getting a compressor and buying some tools. But if a handy guy wants to buy a compressor, there's a lot of choices out there. And so let's talk a little bit about the types of compressors that you may want to buy. And maybe we can direct some of the handy guys out there and handy women where they should shop and what they should get as far as a compressor. So let's talk about the basic varieties. Why don't you get started?
Sure. You've got two general classifications of compressors. You have some that are oil and some that are oil-less. So what that means is the pistons that drive and push the air into the tank are either lubricated with oil or don't need any oil lubrication.
Right. And so the advantage there of having an oilless is obvious, is you don't have to put oil into it. If you have one that is oiled, there's a little chamber where you have to put oil into it, and you probably have to change that out somewhat regularly.
I think it's about once a year.
Right.
You know, the manufacturer will recommend what the interval is there.
And usually there's a little reading on the compressor itself so you can see what the oil level is. And the other thing that's critical about the compressors that have oil is that you must keep the compressor level. when you're using it, because the pistons, if it's not level, then the pistons will not get the oil out of the oil pan, and you could damage the compressor itself.
Right. If you run those oiled compressors without oil, or run them incorrectly, you can risk damaging the piston.
Right. So the disadvantages then of the oiled compressors are maintenance. You have additional maintenance, and a little bit more care is required for those compressors.
So why would you want to buy one of those then?
Well, let's talk about the advantages of a compressor that is oiled. One of the big advantages, as far as I'm concerned, is the noise level. In general, the compressors that are oil compressors are less
noisy.
Less noisy, right? They don't make your eardrums ring.
That's right. They're less noisy, and generally as well, they last longer. They're going to be better built, built for heavier duty use.
Right. So they last longer. They're less noisy. So there are some advantages, and obviously on the other side of the spectrum, you have the oilless. You don't have to worry about the maintenance, but they tend to be loud.
They do.
And I know a popular variety of oilless compressors are what are called the pancake compressors, where the tank is circular and flat, sort of like a pancake, not quite that flat, obviously. But they are a popular, Porter Cable makes one, and there's some others you can buy at Sears and some other companies. But the biggest criticism of those is that they do tend to be loud, and they're usually the oilless variety.
They are, but they're also very inexpensive. And for someone that's just doing a couple projects a year, probably a pretty decent choice.
Okay, so tell me then, so you have the oilless and the oiled compressors, but you also have compressors with large tanks and some compressors with small tanks. What's the big difference there?
Yeah, without getting into all the technical details of CFM and PSI and so forth, the bigger the tank, the less often the motor is going to need to run. That's kind of your bottom line.
Right. So if you have a bigger tank, the motor can fill up the tank with air and give you a lot of compression for your tool, whereas the smaller tank, it's going to run out of compressed air quickly, and it'll have to then bring the engine back on and give you compression. Now, what kind of tools then would require a large tank?
The tools that require large tanks are the ones that consume more air faster. So examples of that would be air-powered sanders, certain types of paint sprayers, impact wrenches, grinders, things of that nature.
Right. So whereas tools such as nailers, framing nailers, finishing nailers, they're not using air ongoing, but in quick bursts, so they wouldn't require necessarily a tank that's as large.
That's right. Depending on how quickly you want to go. Someone who's doing roofing, for example, they tend to fire a lot of nails in sequence nonstop. If you get pretty decent at the roofing, you're just going to be almost constant use there. So there you're going to want large tank compressor. If you're doing woodworking, or working by yourself on a framing project or a trim project, a crown molding project, you're going to not need to worry as much about the size of the tank and the volume of air delivery.
Right, and so it seems to me that if you have the large tank, you could argue that, hey, it's great to have a large tank always, because even if you're using just a nailer, the engine doesn't need to run as often, and you can nail, like you said, maybe a roofer would need. But what is the big disadvantage of having a compressor with a large tank?
Well, it's the size, Paul. I mean, the
size does matter.
It does. We're going to talk about two specific models. Mine is a largish Porter Cable compressor. It's a 20-gallon tank, 6-horsepower compressor, and I would guess, haven't weighed it, but it probably weighs about 60 pounds.
Right. So I know that there have been times where you've asked me to help you move it off your truck or onto your truck, and so it's not really a one-man compressor.
No, I've moved it in and out myself plenty of times, and it's a big royal pain in the neck. And I've done projects where I could absolutely have used a nailer and a compressor, but I've just gone with hand nailing because I didn't feel like packing that into my truck.
Right. Whereas my compressor is a smaller compressor. It's a 2.6 gallon Makita MAC 700. It's MAC 700 is the model. And it is a oiled compressor, whereas Brian's is oilless. And my compressor is much smaller. Sometimes it's referred to as a hot dog compressor because it has a single tank shaped like a hot dog with the compressor on top of it. And the one thing that I really like about my compressor is that you can move it. It's very versatile. You can take it with you. It's not necessarily super light. It still takes some muscle. I think it's about 30 pounds. But you can. One person can move it around the house, move it in the car, and that kind of thing.
Right. But, Paul, the biggest advantage of yours over mine is it's almost whisper quiet. It's amazing how quiet that compressor is.
Right. Now, we're going to have some garage time now where we're going to demonstrate these compressors, but you're not really going to get a sense of how much louder the Porter Cable compressor is versus the Makita. But you'll just have to take our word for it that that's the case. Let's go on up to Brian's garage for our garage tool test, our head-to-head challenge.
All right, here we go.
Okay, so now we're out here in the garage, and you'll hear Brian working on the Porter Cable. And we have Brian with his Porter Cable framing nailer connected to his large, how many gallon tank is that?
It's a 20 gallon tank.
And it is connected with the framing nailer, fully charged, and he's ready to go. And he's going to see how many nails he can put into a 2x4.
Right, so here I've got my compressor set to 90 PSI, full charge, full clip of nails, and away I go. Nailing 3.5 inch nails into 2x4, and the compressor kicks on after 30 nails.
Yeah, and you can hear that in the background and get a sense, but probably not an exact sense of how loud the compressor is or the nailing. So now we had Brian also connect the framing nailer to the Makita and do the same thing, and tell us about your experience here with the Makita.
Well, I almost didn't hear the Makita come on. It was so quiet. No, it was obvious when it came on, but it was significantly quieter, and I got through 9 nails before the compressor came on.
Okay, so there you have a sense of the difference between a compressor that has a large tank versus the small tank. Now, we talked about the Makita being a lot quieter, so while it does come on more often, at least it's not as loud.
That's right. And, you know, one of the other things that we didn't really talk about as we were preparing for the show, Paul, but is the amount of electrical power, too, that these things draw. I use my compressor up at a campground quite often, and I require a 20-amp circuit for my compressor. And quite often I'm throwing breakers or blowing fuses because of the high power draw, whereas one of the smaller compressors probably will not draw quite as much power, and you could use it, have a little more flexibility on where you use it.
Right. The Makita at MAC 700 actually requires 12.4 amps, so it will get by with a 15-amp circuit. So,
right.
But it will require still pretty much a dedicated circuit.
Right. Mine requires a 15-amp circuit. It draws 15 amps on startup.
Okay, so the question then is, if you're going to buy a compressor, you can get a sense there, the difference between a large and a small tank. But where is a good place to go to buy a compressor?
The Handy Guys Podcast store.
That's right. So you can check out our store, and we'll have both the Porter Cable compressor and the Makita. And they are both highly rated on Amazon, and we really like our compressors. And obviously, we talked about the advantages and disadvantages of having a large versus small compressor. Okay, so you have your compressor. You've decided you're going to be a handyman. You have a compressor, but just a compressor isn't going to do you much good. You need to get some tools to connect.
That's right. And it's a slippery slope with those tools because there's hundreds and hundreds of different options.
Right. So you can let's take us through a few of the options.
Right. Well, kind of my progression is I was adding air tools as I felt I needed them. So my first one was a framing nailer, I believe. And I picked up the Porter Cable FR350 roundhead framing nailer. And that thing is probably, I don't know how old it is now, but it just keeps on going and firing those nails. It can take up to a 3.5 inch nail, and it's for, you know, building walls and building decks and whatever you might.
Right, and I also have the same framing nailer. And in addition to the framing nailer, my first finish nailer was a 16-gauge finish nailer. And there are really about three general sizes of in the finish nailing category. You can have 15-gauge nails, 16-gauge nails, and 18-gauge nails. Now, strangely, a lot of things in carpentry, where the numbers don't necessarily mean, the bigger number doesn't necessarily mean that the nail is bigger. And the same thing is true with finish nails. And so the 15-gauge nail is the biggest, whereas the 18-gauge nail is the smallest. That's so, Brian, tell us why you might use one of these finishing nails over the other.
Well, it's going to be come down to holding power, the size of the hole that it makes, and the length of the nail that you need for the job that you're doing. So a crown molding may require a 2-inch nail, and you're going to want to make sure that you've got a large enough nail that'll support the weight and also be long enough as well. So crown molding, 15-gauge, general trim like door and window trim, you can go down in size to your 16-gauge nail, or use your 15 if that's what you've got. And then your 18-gauge is often referred to as a brad nailer, and you'll use that for real small, maybe some detail molding, or I use it quite a bit in my woodworking hobby.
Right. Now, you can get the 18-gauge, which is the smallest nail of those finished nails, up to 2 inches in size. So you can use it for crown molding, but you have to be careful, because if it's a pretty heavy molding, if it's a heavier wood or you use an MDF for your crown molding, you have to be careful because there's not much of a head on the 18-gauge nail, which is the way it's designed. It's meant to be hidden and not make much of a mark in the wood and not to be seen. And it's very easy to fill. But on the other hand, it doesn't have a lot of holding power.
That's right.
So in which case, if you're using the heavier molding, you might want to look then again at the 15-gauge finish nailer. But the 15-gauge has its drawbacks, right? Well, I mean, when you put up crown molding with a 15-gauge, you're left with a pretty significant hole in the wood.
A 15-gauge hole.
Right, but it's more than that, because the 15-gauge finish nailers have a sort of a rectangular head on them.
Yeah, they do leave a little bit of a larger hole, the larger the nail. And so that may involve a little more work in doing your filling of those nail holes when you're done.
So I've known some people that have gotten away with the 18 and they can get by. Now the 16 is sort of a compromise. It's in between. It's a pretty good all-around nailer, which is why I bought a 16-gauge as my first finish nailer. It can do it pretty much do it all. It's a good compromise.
Yeah, it's not bad. The other advantage of a 15-gauge nailer over the 16 is the 15-gauge nailer is angled. So it can Right. get you into some a little closer to the edge or tighter spots.
Right, you're talking about the tool itself. Actually, where the nails load into the cartridge, it's angled in such a way so that if you're working in a tight quarter, it doesn't get in the way.
That's right. So the nails come, you know, they're all attached together in a strip, and that strip, the nails are angled on that strip, and they match whichever nailer you
Right, so that's actually a 15-gauge angled nailer is what it's called, and usually the 18-gauge is a small enough nailer that you don't need it to be angled. It just can allow you to get into tight corners.
Yep, the 18 and the 16, those are straight, and they're not too bad to get into those tight corners.
Right, so the 15 is just a bigger nailer, so they make them angled so that you can use it in tighter places. So we'll have those nailers on our website. We both like the Porter Cable finish nailers and also the framing nailer as well. Now, the framing nailer is a whole different beast. It's a big tool, and it takes some getting used to, doesn't it?
It does. It's a little intimidating at first. You need to, you know, of course, wear your ear protection, eye protection, and all of that. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. So you do need to be careful with it.
Right. So when you're using these tools, they are, you know, almost like shooting a gun. They call them nail guns for a reason. It's using compressed air to shoot a nail into wood, and there's a lot of potential danger there, right? They have safety switches on them, but you have to be careful. You need to wear your eyes and ear protections. You need to keep your fingers back, and you need to make sure you don't shoot the thing into your leg, right?
That would be bad.
So, right. So tell us, have you ever had any bad experiences with using a compressed nailer?
Yeah, you twist my arm. I'll share my my horror story with my pneumatic nailer. So I was doing a project one Saturday. I was by myself. I was at my cottage, and I was installing some paneling, and with paneling you have trim that hides the inside corners, outside corners, that type of trim with it. And I was using the 18 gauge brad nailer with 1¼-inch long nails. I was working by myself, no one was around, and I needed a third hand. I was trying to position my piece of trim, and while I was holding the nailer in my other hand. And these nailers, especially the older ones, the newer ones don't have this anymore, but they have a feature that you can enable on the newer ones. It doesn't come this way by default anymore, but it's called a bump nail. So what that means is, as you're holding down the trigger, each time you compress the tip of the nail gun against the work, it fires a nail. So of course I was using that feature, and as I was positioning my workpiece, I had my finger held down on the trigger, and I accidentally bumped the tip of the nailer into my arm, just above my wrist.
Right, so you nailed your wrist.
I nailed right into my, well, not my wrist, I'm going to say my arm.
Okay.
I missed all of the joints and tendons and went straight into
bone. Fortunately, it was a small finished nail, not a frame, large, you know.
Right. It was only 1¼-inch long,
right.
18-gauge diameter nail, and it went all the way in, pulled the skin down tight against the bone. So all I could do, I grabbed a pair of pliers. And I could not pull it out with a pair of pliers because it was down in so tight. I actually had to get a pair of wire cutters and get onto the head of that nail and pull it out.
Nice.
Yeah.
So don't shoot a finished nail into your arm is the moral of the story.
Well, I'll tell you though, Paul, it really actually didn't hurt that bad. It was all
it hit
in
the right spot, I guess.
It was all in the bone, and I worked the rest of the day. I ended up going to the doctor that night because my hand started swelling about 12 hours later. But all was fine. They gave me a tetanus booster and sent me on my way.
All right, so let's review. You got your large tank versus your small tank, oil versus oilless. And we'll have the Makita on our website. Check it out. It's a 2.6-gallon, 12-amp. And this small little Makita, which I really like, is a great tool because it will handle the larger framing nails as well as the finish nails. Now, you won't get as many nails before the compressor has to turn on when you're using a larger framing nail. But because it's not real loud, it's not a big deal.
Right. I think I would use it for 90% of the DIY stuff that I would do. I would probably not use it on a roofing job for the reasons we mentioned. I wouldn't use it to spray paint. I wouldn't use it for tools that require continuous flow of air, such as grinders and sanders and things
right.
like that.
Right. There you'll need the bigger tanks and the bigger horsepower compressors.
Right.
All right. Well, that's all for this time.
We're the Handy Guys, Brian and Paul. And please contact us, submit questions. We'll answer your questions on the air on a future show. Our phone number is area code 615-676-0877. Or you can email us at thehandyguyspodcast.com or use the contact form on our website, www.handyguyspodcast.com.
All right, until next week.
We're the Handy Guys, Brian and Paul.
See you.
Bye.